the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Is it going to be different this time for Bitcoin? This is indeed a good time to be in the crypto industry. Valour is South Africa's largest crypto exchange by volume and was formed 6 years ago with an eye on building a marketplace where people could get introduced to cryptocurrencies in a way that was safe and easy. Crypto exchanges do well when crypto prices are climbing and new entrants start jumping on board, as they appear to be doing this time around. Now, there's always been the feeling that Bitcoin's parabolic run to 1.4 million rand, quite an astonishing run we've seen over the last year, will be followed by an inevitable collapse in price. It's happened time and time again in the past and may in fact happen in the future. But could things be different this time? Institutions like BlackRock and Fidelity are piling into Bitcoin now that exchange-traded funds have been legalized in the US. And that means institutions can get involved and invest in the world's fastest growing asset of the last decade, something that they've been eyeing with envy from afar while retail investors were free to ride the Bitcoin train. Then there's the Bitcoin halving event that happens in just a few days. That's when miners see their rewards cut in half, as happens every 4 years. And that basically means that new supply to the market is going to be cut in half, and that's generally associated with a rise in price. Well, we're going to look at all of this, and we're joined by the CEO of Valour, Farzam Hassani, who's no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. So welcome, Farzam. How are you keeping?
Thank you so much. I'm keeping very well. Always a pleasure to be with you, Kieran.
Good stuff. Now, Bitcoin hit 1.4 million in the last month, Rand I'm talking about, and that seems to be holding up rather well at these levels. So answer my question there that I posed in the beginning. Is it going to be different for Bitcoin this time? And if so, why?
Yeah, right now we're currently sitting at about 1.27 million Rand. It's actually about Bitcoin's about 5.8% down on the day. There was some U.S. factory figures that came out relatively strong today that pushed down dollar-denominated assets for the most part. And Bitcoin still has a lot of volatility, and I expect that to continue. You know, at these levels, we've gone up very high very quickly. So, you know, over the last 3 months, Bitcoin is up about 56%. And when you get that type of volatility on the upswing, you also get volatility on the downswing as well. We've seen this, as you said, time and time again, and I don't see the volatility ceasing anytime soon, Kieran. The reason is I think this is still an asset class that is misunderstood by the world. We've recently seen U.S. ETFs come out in full force, 11 ETFs being approved. According to Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, he said that their Bitcoin ETF, IBIT, is the fastest growing ETF that has ever existed. I'll say that again. Their IBIT ETF at BlackRock is the fastest growing ETF that has ever existed. That's of any asset whatsoever. So when you see that type of interest and you still see skepticism from CEOs of traditional financial institutions that say that this asset that's worth now just shy of 1.3 million Rand a coin, and they say it has no inherent value. Well, you can see that society is still having a debate within itself about what this thing is actually worth. And when there isn't consensus, there's going to be a tremendous amount of volatility. I expect to see a lot more volatility on the upside as well, but we're going to see it on the downside. But I think we're still in the early stages of humanity figuring out what this asset class is worth. Over the next decade or so, I expect it to go up much, much higher. But again, it won't come without its volatility in both directions.
Right. Give us a sense of what volumes are looking like at Valour. We've spoken before, and I did say in the intro that volumes do tend to go up. People start getting interested in cryptocurrencies when prices are going up. And you can see that one of the measures is the number of searches, for example, Google searches for Bitcoin or Ethereum. I presume you're seeing a lot of new clients jumping on board, similar to what we've seen in previous bull runs.
We are. In the last quarter, we've seen the highest trading volume that we've ever experienced in our 6 years of existence. So we have seen a lot of interest, a lot of people coming onto the platform. Interestingly, not just retail customers, but many more institutional and corporate customers that are coming onto the platform as well. I think, you know, after, well, just before the FTX saga in November 2022, we started to see a lot of institutional interest come on board. And then as soon as the failure at FTX happened, we saw that interest disappear and vanish completely. It took about a year and a half for it to start to come back. And now we're seeing that come back and the interest starting to rise. So, and I think that's consistent with what we've seen with the US ETFs, as we just discussed. So I think there is a tremendous amount of interest. But to your point, if you actually look at those graphs of Google searches for Bitcoin, they're nowhere near their all-time highs. So what we saw in 2017, at the end of 2017, was that the price of Bitcoin went up to about $20,000. And in that cycle, there was a run-up, as mentioned, from about $3,000 to $20,000. Now, at the top of that cycle, we saw Bitcoin searches at their all-time high. Everybody was talking about it around the Christmas tables, around the Thanksgiving tables in the United States. Basically, everybody you talk to, you know, whether it's your taxi cab driver or anyone else, was talking about Bitcoin. We're now close to the all-time highs of Bitcoin, and people are not talking about it. This is, you know, an odd article about it hitting an all-time high, but you're not really seeing the retail conversation about this taking off in any way. So I think the frenzy isn't even there, and we're still hitting all-time highs of Bitcoin being close to $70,000 or 1.3 million rand. So I think that we've still got quite a long way to go before we see huge corrections taking place. Doesn't mean that the corrections can't happen. But as I said, my message stays the same. We're going to see a tremendous amount of volatility still.
Yeah, and it does seem from the stats that are coming out of Chainalysis and other people that the sellers, the people who are selling, are generally the retail investors who maybe bought at the previous all-time high of around $65,000 or above $60,000. They are the ones who are sort of getting out because their noses are just above water at the moment. What's also interesting is that you look at look at BlackRock. You mentioned them a little bit earlier. They now, I think they're slightly behind MicroStrategy. They've got something like 200,000 or a little bit more than 200,000 Bitcoin. MicroStrategy probably still the leader, with maybe 210,000 Bitcoin. So that's a huge amount of accumulation happening with institutions. What I want to ask you is, you did mention you're getting some corporate interest. You know, there's talk about maybe we'll have a Bitcoin spot ETF in South Africa. But are you getting institutional bites at, your platform, particularly around Bitcoin?
Absolutely. I think there's nobody that is actually doing their job properly in the financial sector if they aren't seriously considering what the Bitcoin asset class has to do with their customer base. You know, I think we've seen in the United States, as I just mentioned, like, we're talking about the largest and fastest growing ETF that has ever existed. Now, you know, regardless of your personal views of Bitcoin, if you've got an ETF that's the fastest growing ETF that's ever existed in the United States market, which is one of the largest markets, if not the largest market or financial market in the world, then you got your head in the sand if you're not actually considering what this actually means for yourself as a financial institution. So we are seeing that in South Africa. You know, the banks themselves have crypto teams now. You know, 5 years ago, you know, there was a couple. I was in one of the crypto teams, actually, not 5 years ago. Time goes quickly now, about 7 years ago. But we're starting to see that completely on its head. So every bank basically has a crypto team now. They're all talking about it. They're trying to understand how they can position themselves to enter this space. So we're seeing a lot of that, and I think it will build until we see products and services to do with crypto assets and Bitcoin on every single financial platform that exists. I think it will be similar and akin to the internet. You know, back in 1997, I believe it was Morgan Stanley that said, you know, we will not be so irresponsible as to expose our customer data to this thing called the internet. Obviously, now there's pretty much no financial institution that's not on the internet. So I expect to see the same thing with crypto assets.
Right. Now, last year you started offering perpetual futures, and people might roll their eyes at that. So it's an interesting concept. Maybe just explain what these are. Maybe people who are a little bit familiar with financial markets will understand your traditional futures contract, which has an expiry generally once every quarter. And there are some costs and some problems, you know, with those expiries coming up now. So a perpetual future, my understanding is that that would be something that never expires. So explain what these are and who would be using them. Why and why do you have them?
That's a great question. So historically, we've been a spot exchange at Valour, which means that you can buy and sell the underlying Bitcoin. We introduced margin trading on the platform as well, which means you can get some leverage to buy a, you know, with a 5x leverage to buy the spot asset Bitcoin and some others. And then a couple of months ago, we did also introduce this product called perpetual futures. Now, what they are is basically they reference the underlying, which is Bitcoin, but unlike a traditional futures contract, which has an expiry, as you just mentioned, and over time the price of the futures and the price of the spot underlying it converge to the same price at expiry. With perpetual contracts, they are tethered to the spot price through something called a funding rate. Now, not to get too technical, but if the funding rate is positive or negative, then people that are taking a long or a short position get incentivized one way or another, or disincentivized because they have to pay a funding rate or receive a funding rate to make sure that the futures price and the spot price remains intact and remains together. Now, many people don't understand and realize that perpetual futures actually account for about 75% of global crypto trading volume. So this is a market that's actually much bigger than the underlying spot Bitcoin market. And one may ask, why is that the case? Well, you know, if someone's buying Bitcoin, don't they want to take possession of it? And actually, the answer is no. A lot of particularly large traders want actually exposure to the price action of Bitcoin. And so perpetual futures give traders exposure to the price action without actually taking custody of the underlying asset itself. And so on Valour, that price action is actually, you can get your P&L, your profit and loss paid out to you every 4 hours. And so it's a way in which you can get exposure to the price of Bitcoin without buying and holding it for a long time or buying and selling it down the line, but you're actually getting your P&L paid out to you every 4 hours. As I said, it is the largest traded crypto product in existence around the world at 75%. So it's something that all the large platforms across the world offer to their customers, and Valour now offers it to our customers both in South Africa and globally.
And how's that been doing since you launched it? Are you getting a lot of interest in it?
There has been some interest in it. It's smaller than our spot markets at the moment, but we are expecting it to grow significantly because we're going to be announcing, we've already kind of announced, but I'm happy to share on the show over here, which is we're going to be announcing a very large trading pool prize of about 60 million or up to 60 million US dollars over an entire year. So that's up to 5 million US dollars per month to really incentivize global traders who are using the Binances of the world and the Bybits of the world, which are, you know, some of the larger exchanges globally, to actually bring their trading activity and their liquidity to Valour. And the way we do that is to say, as volume picks up on our platform, the revenue that we get, we share that value with our customers. And so we pay it out to customers. And so there's a huge pool of incentives for people to come and join that platform, join our platform. We're looking to launch that probably in the next 1 to 2 months, but we'll make further announcements about that. And we expect the trading volume to increase significantly at that time.
And these are prizes for what exactly? For the highest return over a particular period of time or what?
Actually, just trading volume. So what we're actually targeting is the largest traders that come and trade and use the platform. And so we align our incentives with our largest traders to say, if you use our platform and you're creating revenue for Valour, then you actually get a lot of that revenue back yourself. So it effectively acts as an incentive mechanism for people to get some of the best trading fees that they can possibly have. We already have the lowest or some of the lowest trading fees in the world. But this is an added incentive because one of the most difficult things whenever you start a new product is actually to create liquidity. So we have market makers on the platform now. We have some market takers, which is the traders that come in and trade against the market makers. But what you really need is to incentivize people to come and provide liquidity, and liquidity begets liquidity in financial markets. So it's that kind of flywheel that we're trying to get kickstarted on the platform.
Okay. Now, there's obviously a lot of work to do to get mass adoption in cryptos. We spoke just a minute ago about Google searches not being as high as they were back in 2017. So that does suggest that the mass market hasn't quite bitten on cryptocurrencies yet. And I think part of it is probably there's a trust factor. People hear about a lot of scams and they don't really understand the chain that's involved. You have a cryptocurrency exchange, you have the blockchain, and then you've got around that all kind of potential weak links that can occur. And a lot of marketing is done on social media and people get confused about this. What, in your opinion, has got to happen to make it a little bit easier and safer for the ordinary person to get involved in cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things that needs to happen. But one of the things that is happening right now, which I think is critical, is licensing and a little bit more of oversight, regulatory oversight, responsible and appropriate regulatory oversight of centralized exchanges like Valor. We've seen a lot of pain that's been brought about by players in our industry that have not been held to standards of integrity. And, you know, some of these things are just very plain and simple. You custody a customer's asset. You expect that asset to be completely segregated and safe and kind of completely different to the exchange's own funds. We saw that with FTX that wasn't upheld, but that's really the bare bones of ethics. And so we welcome kind of the movement of regulatory authorities in places like South Africa and elsewhere who have put in place frameworks to bring what are called crypto asset service providers or CASPs under their regulatory ambit, such that we try to get rid of the riffraff in this industry. You know, we try to get only players that are serious about providing good products and services in a responsible way that protects the public. So I think that's the first thing, which is really getting a regulatory framework in place to make sure that the centralized exchanges and counterparties, basically, that people need to trust can be trusted. Of course, it's not a surefire thing because, as we know, in any industry where you do even have a regulation, there are still scandals. So it's not going to stop everything, but at least it's a step in the right direction. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I think is just time, which is, you know, we're talking about a social and psychological and economic phenomenon, which is, you know, a store of value, a means of exchange, a unit of account. This thing doesn't just flip a switch overnight with people moving from one currency or one type of monetary instrument to another. We've already seen a huge change over the last 15 years to the point that nobody knew what Bitcoin was 15 years ago. And now very few people have never heard of Bitcoin, you know, let alone kind of interacted with it in some way or form. And so I think we're going to see that timeline continue and we're going to see it a little bit more adoption. But I think it will dovetail with some of the challenges that we'll see in our traditional financial markets. And so it's a relative kind of phenomenon, which I think is, as we see some difficulties in traditional finance, we see huge debt balloons in sovereign debt across the world. We see some troubles with that. We see some troubles with fiat currency. And I think we'll start to see kind of the adoption of crypto assets in a much bigger way as time goes on.
Okay. Now, by the way, on that point, has Valor received its FSP license from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority?
We check it every single day. We are on the website where it says that it's been referred to the licensing committee. We have every indication that it should be coming soon, but we haven't received official indication that we have received our license as of yet.
Okay. Well, you'll keep us informed about that, no doubt. But recently, Binance pulled out of Nigeria, and I wanted to discuss this with you. That was after two of its executives were arrested there. A very strange case, because the two executives employed by Binance were, you know, former law enforcement officials. They were there for some other reason, basically to sit down and have a discussion with regulators there, but they were arrested. And the claim was from Nigeria that the company had been involved in destabilizing the Naira. It's hard to believe, but it does show that there are regulators who are hostile to and even terrified of cryptos. Do you see more countries adopting a hostile stance to crypto? I mean, there does seem to be an inevitability about crypto, and yet you get events like this, which can set it back in a country like Nigeria, perhaps for a few years.
A couple of things to say about the Nigeria situation. It's a very sad situation. As you mentioned, these two executives are just employees of Binance. I personally know one of them, actually, who was the one from Kenya that purportedly escaped. I haven't been in touch with him, but you know, I know that he had a one-year-old child, that he missed the birthday of his one-year-old child. He was literally there to go and have a discussion. He doesn't control anything at Binance. He's an employee. So it's a situation that I think is very sad and worrying for Nigeria as well. It doesn't serve Nigeria well to do that. And it, in many respects, it was kind of seen as a national hostage situation, where they were taking a couple of executives, I've heard this language, as hostage for Binance to pay a $10 billion fine. So that is worrying. But what I think is that, you know, that's very particular to Nigeria and some other countries that may not have a strong rule of law. I think in this case, you know, the claim that it destabilizes the Naira, or an exchange destabilizes the Naira, is a very misguided claim. And the reason I say that, it's like saying that, you know, a thermometer, when you put it into the mouth of a patient, causes a fever. And that's not the case. The thermometer is a litmus test to take the temperature of a patient. And this, in the same way that an exchange is just a marketplace for participants to come and to see what the value of an asset is. The Naira itself has been, you know, destabilized for a long time. It's been losing a lot of value. So to kind of pin that on an exchange, I think is a very unfortunate case. I do think, to your question, I think that as crypto assets become a little bit more prevalent, and I think some of the vested interests see a little bit more threat to their systems, I think we will see some resistance to crypto assets. This isn't something new. We've seen it over the past 5, 6, 7 years. I think it will continue over the next few years, but in jurisdictions where there isn't an acknowledgement of what the people want. You know, and this is just, there's no harm that a Bitcoin does. It's just, you know, people want to either buy it or sell it. And I think those jurisdictions in the world that recognize what crypto assets are, recognize the promise that this technology and this asset class has for humanity, and embrace it through a responsible and appropriate regulatory framework, I think those jurisdictions will do very well. And I think the jurisdictions that have acted like Nigeria recently, to kind of create an environment where people don't know what's going on. In 2021, it was banned by the CBN. This past December, it was unbanned by the CBN. And then a couple of months later, now the crypto industry was blocked by the telecoms providers from accessing the websites. I mean, it's very topsy-turvy. And I think that doesn't bode well for the country itself. And so I think that does a disservice to the jurisdictions themselves. But I think in time that will change as well, and we'll see an embrace of this industry by all jurisdictions. But there will be some bumps along the way.
Indeed. We're going to leave it there. Thanks so much, Farzan Ehsani, CEO of Valor. Good to talk to you again. And thanks for your insights and that update on what is happening at Valor and in Bitcoin.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.